Chapter 4. Obi-Wan needs to ask for directions thrice before he makes it to the mess hall. When he enters, it's well past 9 in the evening, and far less busy than when Wooly had shown it to him. Small groups of clones sit, making small talk over mostly empty trays. He spots Commander Cody, sitting at the end of a long table near the back with two troopers Obi-Wan doesn't recognize. As if he realizes he's being watched, Cody lifts his head and catches Obi-Wan's eyes. Obi-Wan gives the man a small, polite nod, and then turns to leave Cody to it and get some food for himself. There isn't too much of a variety of food left, if there even was one in the first place. But he isn't picky. He takes his tray with thick, yellow soup and what looks like stale bread to an empty table. He sits down and finishes his soup in under 5 minutes. It is unnecessarily fast, he knows, but old habits die hard. He considers spending some time with the buzz of conversation around him reading on his datapad, but Steady's warning to limit both his work and screen time echoes through his mind. Probably for the best. And, of course, his own health, if he obliges. So he gets up, puts away his tray with dirty dishes, and mentally prepares himself to get lost at least twice on his way back. The route he took to get here was far from direct, after all, so he's going to attempt to find a better one. When he gets to the doors of the mess hall, he runs into Cody, who looks a lot like he is waiting, still in his armor, his helmet tucked under his elbow and sharp eyes on Obi-Wan. It's hardly subtle, but Obi-Wan can appreciate that. Wooly informed me you found the Maverick large, Cody says conversationally, with a knowing look in his eyes. I thought I could walk you back to your room to avoid you getting lost. It is certainly a way to say either, I'm here to keep an eye on you, or I have questions you need to answer. Perhaps it's both, two birds with one stone and all that. The commander seems like the kind of man that is efficient like that. Thank you, Commander, Obi-Wan says, and when Cody turns and walks away into the opposite direction of which Obi-Wan had come from on his arrival, he follows. When they've fallen into step, a rather slow one, and Obi-Wan is grateful for Cody's consideration, Obi-Wan glances at Cody. I appreciate the concern, although I am surprised a man of your rank would spend his time chaperoning a guest. Cody glances at him with a raised eyebrow. You don't strike me as the oblivious type, Triumvir, is all he says. And the thing is, Obi-Wan isn't. He knows this is the first time he's alone with Cody since they met. He also knows that the man must have questions, and that this is the first opportunity to ask them. Obi-Wan, please, he says, because if they are going to do this, which is Cody asking questions that Obi-Wan will evade at any cost, he'd rather the other use his name. Cody, but you already knew that, Cody says, voice steady and professional, but he doesn't need his tone to change to sound accusing. I do wonder, Obi-Wan, where we have met, he says, and his eyes glint in the fluorescent lights overhead as he takes in Obi-Wan. A man such as yourself, I'd imagine I would remember. Obi-Wan lets out a surprised laugh at the unexpected tease, which settles into a grin when he quips back at Cody. You're a famous man, Marshal Commander. I'm certain many people recognize you. If Cody is surprised by the words, he doesn't show it. My face is one in millions. Marshal Commander or not, no Natborn would know me from any of my brothers, he says as he leads Obi-Wan to the nearest turbolift. When they reach it, he calls for the lift and, as they wait, gives Obi-Wan a pointed look. Not without reason. Obi-Wan could say that he would know all of them through their differences in the Force, even if they all carry the same face. He doubts that it would improve the situation, though, considering he's not even sure if the clones realize he's Force-sensitive. So instead, he shrugs and gives Cody a pleasant smile. It's nothing important. From a certain point of view, it's not even a lie. The vision is not important, not anymore, simply because it is redundant, a future that will never be. The lift arrives, and they silently enter it. There's a trooper about to follow, but one pointed look from his commanding officer has him change his mind. The doors close, leaving them alone, and when the lift starts moving, Cody says, You looked like it was important. Obi-Wan crosses his arms in front of his chest with a huff. I wasn't exactly lucid. He would never have said it if he had been. Of course, Cody agrees politely, and then decides to drastically change tactics. You know General Jin. Obi-Wan makes a face. This is something he can't deny. I do. Cody hums. Also from the news? He asks, and it almost sounds like a joke, considering that's where you learned about me. Obi-Wan doesn't rise to the bait. You can ask your general why we know each other. I will, Cody says. An empty threat. They both know that he won't. Obi-Wan. Hey, Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is trying to find an empty seat in the rather crowded mess hall when he hears someone call his name. He looks around and finds the familiar face of Wooly beaming at him from three tables away. The moment their eyes catch, Wooly waves him over. Obi-Wan makes his way over to the long table, which only has some free seats at the edges, and gives Wooly a smile. Hello, Wooly, he greets, and gives the others at the table a smile as well. You'll join us, right? Wooly asks, not waiting for an answer and already turning to the men sitting next to him and making a shooing motion with his hands. Come on, make some space. There's some muttering as the men shuffle down the bench, dragging their trays with them, to make space for Obi-Wan. No, Obi-Wan objects. You don't have to. Wooly waves him off with a lopsided grin. Our pleasure, he says with an easy shrug, and pats the spot next to him that's now free. Come, sit. Besides, the bald man sitting across from Wooly says, as Obi-Wan sits down, we'd like the opportunity to meet you personally as well. I'm Waxer. Obi-Wan forces a gasp down. His mind flashes back to his vision, to a soldier clad in now familiar orange-painted armor that had the Twi'lek on his helmet. That was this man, that's now sitting opposite of Obi-Wan with kind eyes and a welcoming smile. Just as with the commander, it is both exciting and haunting to put a face with the name that's been burned on his mind since his teenage years. That's Boyle, Waxer continues cheerfully, waving at the man next to him. Boyle, who has a rather remarkable mustache, gives Obi-Wan a nod. And we've met, the man sitting on Wooly's other side pipes up. He leans forward, looking at Obi-Wan around Wooly with a small smile. He looks to be the same age as Wooly, both of them seeming younger than Waxer and Boyle, and has a long scar running down his left cheek. I'm Longshot. Ah, yes, he remembers Longshot from the fight. Then I owe you my thanks for protecting me. Longshot chuckles. Didn't look like you needed it. That was one great shot you took out there. Call it luck, Obi-Wan says. Luck being the experience of the Melodon War and the Force, but neither of those things the men around him need to know. Longshot hums. Heard you're from a pretty cool place. Oh? Obi-Wan raises an eyebrow. Waxer laughs. Thumper's quite taken with Melodon. I think he wants to move there once the war's over. Might be a while before he gets that chance, Boyle says. Boyle, Waxer chides, and jabs his elbow into Boyle's side. Wooly and Longshot ignore them with fond smiles, as if this is a regular occurrence. Well, he did make it sound good, Wooly says, and then asks, is it true that skating is an important mode of transportation? Obi-Wan laughs. It seems that gossip spreads quite effectively through a battalion of clones, even if the end result isn't exactly close to the truth any longer. Not quite, he says. That's how they curiously and enthusiastically rope him into talking about Melodon. Until Cody walks up to the table from where he was previously seated at the back of the mess. Harassing the Triumvir, are we? Just chatting, Wooly blurts, shaking his head. No harassing of any kind, sir. Cody raises an eyebrow at him. Mind if I join? He asks, and it sounds like a genuine request. Not at all, Commander, Boyle answers with a grin, and the men have shuffled over on the bench, this time without complaint, to make space for Cody to sit down next to Waxer. It is incredible how quickly most other troopers suddenly finish their meal and flee the table, leaving only a third of their initial group behind. None of Obi-Wan's conversation partners have moved. In fact, they all seem rather unbothered by the fact their commander is sitting at the table with them. Don't mind me, Cody says, eyes gleaming in amusement as he tracks the men fleeing from the table. Feel free to continue. Wooly certainly doesn't need to be told twice. What was it like growing up on Meladon? Obi-Wan sighs. It's not an unexpected question, considering the men are all curious and not the least bit shy about voicing said curiosity. But here, he unfortunately doesn't have any fun stories to share. I spent most of my childhood days on Coruscant, actually. I was only 13 when I went to Meladon. It certainly made for a better childhood. Before I came, Meladon was already at war for several centuries. There was a war, Boyle asks. Centuries? Longshot cries. The others all look at Obi-Wan in varying states of shock and surprise. It was a conflict between the Mellida and the Dawn. No one knows why it started, not after so long, Obi-Wan explains, a pinched expression on his face. There is more to say, of course, of generation after generation fueling a war fought out of nothing but sickly tradition and hatred, of the halls of evidence, memorials that did nothing more than brainwash and spread propaganda, of children growing up in ruins, no place to call home, and starving with no schools or proper health care. Of those very children deciding that enough was enough, and either they would end the war or die trying. Cerassi would frown and Neald would slap his shoulder if they would ever hear him say this, but it's not Obi-Wan's place to share those things. He calls himself Meladonian with pride and carries his title as Triumvir with honor, but their past is not his past. Not when he carries warm memories of his youth at the temple with him, while all the others have are nightmares. He is one of them, and has been ever since he decided to stay and fight for what was right. But that does not mean that their pain is his to share. He shakes his head and forces a smile onto his lips. But at least we ended the war. You helped end a war? Longshot asks, awe clear in his voice. Wooly tips his head to the side. Did you fight? He supposes this is something they can relate to, but he can't share their awe or excitement, not when the words, "We all did," still leave a bitter taste in his mouth. When did the war end? Waxer asks, soft and somewhat gentle as if he's speaking to a wounded animal. Obi-Wan gives him a small smile. Almost 2 decades ago. 2 decades, Cody echoes. All eyes turn to him, but the commander is looking at Obi-Wan with a frown. You sure that's right? He asks bluntly. Obi-Wan narrows his eyes, indignation clear on his face, and his voice is sharp as he demands, Excuse me. Cody's gaze doesn't waver. You Natborns don't age like we do. It's much slower. But 2 decades ago, even you were too young to fight in a war. The anger starting to boil in Obi-Wan's chest dissipates. Of course, the man that commands the Seventh Sky Corps has a quick, sharp mind. Of course, he did the math, and, of course, with all the questions Obi-Wan has left him with, he is not going to leave it unaddressed. Obi-Wan doesn't look away from Cody, even if the grief and the scars of war try to claw their way out of the cavities of his heart. We were too young, that's true, but we did fight. He says softly, a wry smile pulling his features into something anguished. If it wasn't for the young, the elders would still be fighting. There is a shocked beat of silence, Cody's expression falling into one of understanding, followed by regret. Before he can say anything, the others have recovered. Waxer looks absolutely shocked as he whispers, The young. But, Longshot stammers. Where were your parents? Boyle asks. The government? Obi-Wan shakes his head. When the adults have been fighting for generations, there's not much left of a place. What about the Republic? Wooly's voice is small, like he's almost afraid of the answer. It was a civil war outside of Republic space. They didn't have any jurisdiction, nor did they hold any interest in Meladon. They did intervene once. But only because the Mellida and the Dawn requested them to send a Jedi to help negotiate a peace treaty, Obi-Wan says. It feels strange to talk about the situation like this. so far removed and leaving out as many details, any details, actually, as he can get away with. Ah, but they sent a Jedi, Wu Li says. They must have helped end the war, right? Obi-Wan presses his lips together. He almost doesn't want to say it, with how hopeful the men look, with their unwavering trust in the Republic and the Jedi. But it was a long time ago. The galaxy at large hadn't been at war. The situations aren't comparable at all, even if, to this day, Obi-Wan believes that Jin should have stayed, should have let go of his attachment to Tal and the mission directive, as he was known to do whenever it suited him, and supported the young. But while he has his opinions and feelings on what his former master should have done, that is in the past and can't be changed. Right? Longshot echoes when they don't get an answer, soft and hopeful. Obi-Wan shakes his head. Ending the war was never the objective of the mission. The Jedi were called to help negotiate, but it was a trap and one of them got severely injured, he says, and hopes the lack of details will go unquestioned this time. In the end, the Jedi left, and it was the young that ended the war. Which Jedi did they send? Cody asks, gentler this time. Obi-Wan looks at him, at those sharp eyes that don't hide the thoughts running through the man's mind, the conclusions he is most likely coming to. Well, Obi-Wan supposes he owes the commander at least one answer. It's not important, he says carefully. It was a long time ago. Cody's eyes widen at the words that are an echo of their earlier conversation. You know General Jin. Right, Cody says, and offers Obi-Wan an apologetic smile. I'm sorry. Obi-Wan shakes his head, giving Cody a reassuring smile in return. No harm done, Commander. He comms Neeld that evening, or at least it's evening cycle on the Maverick. On Melodon, it's the middle of the day, and he's caught Neeld doing flimsy work. Neeld happily sets his work aside in favor of talking with Obi-Wan, but not before waving a hand at his desk with an exaggerated sigh. The amount of work I need to do to pick up your slack is ridiculous. Is this really what you normally do? Obi-Wan laughs. I probably do more, he admits. Obi, Neeld scolds. You really shouldn't. We're supposed to be a triumvirate, aren't we? Obi-Wan waves him off. Cerasi has Hugo, and we both know that you hate administrative work. Really, I don't mind. Neeld rolls his eyes. Can't you ask those clones if they can make one of you too? Not send one with, Obi-Wan asks with a huff, because surely that would be more efficient than actually cloning him. Even he has to admit the galaxy at large doesn't need two of him running around. Neeld scoffs. No thanks, I'd rather have you. They're not that bad, Neeld. They're still the same clones that will destroy Zahava, Neeld retorts sharply. Obi-Wan sighs. At 15, it had seemed like a good idea to tell his fellow Triumvir and the Council about his vision, especially when he could still feel the sweat of experiencing it sticking against his back and a grief not his own echoing through his heart. Now, though, there are times when he wonders if it was the right thing to share with people a thing they would never fully understand. But hindsight is 20/20 and can't be changed. So, for what feels like the umpteenth time, he tells Neeld, that's not how visions work. Even if they did, we did all we could to prevent this one from happening. Besides, he adds with a frown, the clones are just soldiers. They hardly have a say. They're just following orders. It just makes me nervous. I know. Neeld sighs and with a wave of his hand dismisses the conversation. So, what are they like then? They all the same since they're clones? They're far from the same, Obi-Wan says with a roll of his eyes. They're individuals, have different personalities. They're not droids. Still all have the same name and age. I don't think they're all the same age, Obi-Wan says. He thinks of Thumper and how he's only recently joined the 212th, how he brims with bright-eyed excitement and the kind of energy thrumming through his veins that matches little Hugo's. He makes a face. I think some of them are young, though. How young? Neeld asks with a frown, something hesitant creeping into his voice. I don't know. Cody said they age much quicker than we do, but I'm not sure what that means in actual years. They look like adults. Cody, Neild echoes, voice flat and expression pinched. As in Commander Cody. Of course, that is what Neild picks up on. Obi-Wan resists the urge to sigh. Yes. Kark, this situation couldn't be any worse. Neild throws his hands up in the air in exasperation. Now you gotta be stuck on a ship with that guy, too. At least those Star Destroyers are massive. Should be easy enough to avoid him. In theory, Neild is right. With the sheer size of the Maverick, it should be easy enough not to run into someone unless one really wants to. It's what Obi-Wan has done with Jyn, after all, and aside from the two prior interactions, he's been quite successful. But part of him knows that avoidance goes both ways. It is not only his fault that somehow the commander seems to pop up wherever he goes. You are avoiding him, aren't you? Neild asks impatiently after a few seconds, when Obi-Wan doesn't say anything. Obi-Wan presses his lips together. Obi, Neild says, with a warning ring to his voice. He doesn't say more, nor does he need to. They both know what he's saying with just that. Obi-Wan gives Neild a smile. He hopes it's convincing. I know what I'm doing, he says, even if it's not true. He's never been in a situation like this before, which means he is improvising at best. Neild sighs, his turned down lips saying that he doesn't believe Obi-Wan in the slightest. Just be careful, he warns softly. I've got a bad feeling about this. Every morning after breakfast, Obi-Wan has a physical therapy session in a secluded corner of the gym. Lyga, his physical therapist, is a soft-spoken man with a buzzed haircut and a shooting star tattoo beside his left eye. But his demure and gentle way of coaxing Obi-Wan through exercises and stretches doesn't mean he's a pushover. He easily finds the edges of Obi-Wan's comfort level and makes him push past them, telling his patient in that soft voice that the only complaint he will hear is that of pain. Obi-Wan can be uncomfortable, but he shouldn't be in pain. That doesn't mean that he isn't left feeling sore after every session. Normally, he goes back to his deck to hit the freshers after his session. This time in the morning, the freshers are mostly empty, and while Obi-Wan doesn't mind the idea of communal showers, he, at least, is in a position where he can avoid them when they're at their busiest. Today, though, he's waved over by an enthusiastic thumper sitting on one of the benches surrounded by quite a few of his brothers. You have to see this, is all Thumper says, and yet again a bunch of troopers are made to shuffle over to make space for Obi-Wan to sit down. See what? Obi-Wan asks. He doubts arguing will do much, for it seems that if a trooper wants to sit with him, Obi-Wan can only oblige. Not that he minds. Thumper waves a hand over to the mats, and Obi-Wan's eyes follow easily. On the mat stand Cody and another trooper that Obi-Wan doesn't know. He looks rather beaten up, though. Buck's just got his ass kicked, Thumper provides softly. Joined the same time I did, but he isn't so good at hand-to-hand. The commander stepped in to give some pointers. Obi-Wan blinks in surprise. He looks at the mat again, at the embarrassed and hesitant Buck and a surprisingly gentle Cody, showing the proper way to block an attack. Not that you'd see the gentleness from looking at the man. On the outside, Cody is all perfect posture and direct instructions. But in the Force, he feels mellow, like he's in his element teaching a shiny some valuable life skills. It is, for lack of a better word, rather cute. Something that only Obi-Wan is privy to, considering all the men around him are as Force-sensitive as rocks. An almost guilty and intimate look into the man's inner workings that Obi-Wan isn't sure he should have gotten, whether that be for the commander's privacy or the warm feeling now curling through his chest. The commander is wasting his time, a trooper a few seats left of Obi-Wan mumbles. Cody's eyes snap to the man that said the words, and a hush falls over the gym almost immediately. All softness he radiated in the Force is gone. What was that? He asks, voice as sharp as a vibroknife. Do I hear someone volunteering for a demonstration? The man jumps up, standing at attention and looking very much like he regrets having a voice to begin with. Commander, I was just volunteering, Cody interrupts, and within a few large strides comes to stand in front of the other man. Their chests are almost touching, and Cody's face is drawn into a mask of sternness as he asks, "Was that not what you were doing, Trooper?" A shudder runs down the man's spine. "Yes, sir." "Good. Get on the mat." It's not a fair fight. The trooper, Chunk, Thumper says, is caught off guard. Motivated to win, perhaps, but nervous still at having to face his commanding officer in a round of hand-to-hand. His movements are slightly jolted, too slow and then too fast. Cody also doesn't take it easy on Chunk. His movements are an awe-inspiring combination of ruthless efficiency and effortless elegance, experience and skill blending together in an impressive demonstration. Not that Chunk would agree, laying beaten on the floor in just a few minutes. But Obi-Wan certainly does, after his eyes have tracked Cody's movements and form throughout the short spar. He feels exhilarated, too, but that might also be what he's picking up from the troops around him. No one said a word, but excitement vibrates through the Force as if on the inside the clones are all collectively cheering. Cody allows Chunk a second to scamper to his feet and stand at attention before he steps in close, breathing into Chunk's face with a scowl. "Next time, you will respect and help your brothers instead of making me waste my time on you. Do I make myself clear?" "Yes, sir." Cody nods in acknowledgement. "Dismissed," he barks. Chunk all but runs out of the gym. "The rest of you get back to your training or dismiss yourselves," Cody warns, before he turns around and marches back to Buck, standing on the other side of the mat and looking like he'd rather just disappear into it. The men around Obi-Wan scatter, and Obi-Wan's not one of Cody's troops to be ordered around, but there is enough authority and warning in the man's voice that even he decides it's best to walk away. Besides, he has a shower to take. Obi-Wan lets out a happy sigh when he steps under the scalding spray of the shower. He stands there, head bent and letting the water cascade over him and counting the seconds. No one's told him that he only gets 2 minutes of water, but he's seen the men take quick showers only. 30 seconds on, turn it off to lather yourself in soap and then turn on the spray again for a leisurely 90-second rinse-off. If they can do it every single day, he can manage for however long he's on the Maverick. He's just turned off his spray and started massaging soap into his hair when a pair of naked feet pat against the floor. He doesn't look up. No one's taught him communal shower etiquette, and showering with 20 adult soldiers is vastly different than a bunch of teenagers whose first instinct when they see running water is to gag because it reminds them of a sewer. But he's very certain that keep your eyes to yourself is pretty standard. His resolve to just keep spreading soap suds over himself, completely ignoring the new occupant of the room, disappears, though, when the man decides to use the shower next to Obi-Wan's. His eyes snap up in surprise, because so far everyone's kept their distance from him, and he's not a prude, but he's been perfectly fine with that distance. His eyes are met with none other than Commander Cody, who raises an eyebrow at Obi-Wan and gives a rather cocky smile. "Don't mind me," he says, and turns on his own spray. And Obi-Wan shouldn't, but he sneaks a peek anyway, because in the end, he is only human, and Cody is so very easy on the eyes. All the men are, but there is something about the combination of that handsome face with Cody's posture, attitude, and Force presence that draws Obi-Wan in. And he's seen a glimpse, of course, during the commander's spar. The blacks the men wear do little to hide their physique, after all. But after seeing the man perform a rather perfect-looking roundhouse kick, well, excuse Obi-Wan for wanting to catch another glimpse of those strong legs. Which, really, is a terrible idea, because Cody isn't just strong legs. He's muscle, abs, and perfectly imperfect dark skin that seems to glimmer under the water. It's only a second's glance, even if it feels much longer, and Obi-Wan certainly berates himself for being so tactless. Standing in a communal shower, ogling the man next to him, he's sure everyone back home would make fun of him if they were ever to find out. He finishes soaping himself up and turns his spray back on. It's only when he steps under it and leans his head back to allow the water to cascade down his face that he feels as if he's being watched. He swallows, a heat that's very much not the hot water, flushing over his skin. Because there's only 4 of them left now, and surely it isn't either of the 2 men on the other side of the room. He should ignore it, rinse off, and try to avoid Cody until he's back on Melodon. But the more time Obi-Wan spends around Cody, the more he feels that the man is like one of these things you want, but know you shouldn't have. It's a complicated thing that he will do his very best to ignore, even if a traitorous voice at the back of his mind wonders if the feeling's mutual. He glances to his left just in time to catch Cody averting his eyes, leaking embarrassment into the Force. Obi-Wan swallows, happy for the fact that his skin is already a nice pink from the water's heat. "I've got a bad feeling about this," Neald had said. As Obi-Wan turns off his spray, wishes Cody a good day without looking at the man, and leaves the room with a pair of eyes burning into his back, he finds himself feeling the same. If only he could bring himself to care more. Obi-Wan doesn't know where the Maverick is. It's not information he's been made privy to, considering he isn't actually part of the Gar and he hasn't asked. Part of him wants to know, yet another part of him is grateful he can bask in relative ignorance on what will be happening when the men deploy down to the planet in 3 hours. 2 hours now, as the announcement coming over the ship's public comms that all personnel prepare for deployment in 3 hours came an hour ago, right at the beginning of the morning cycle. He's kept to his room since, not wanting to be in the way. But one can only wait so long when a visit to the Fresher is needed. He leaves his room at the same time as Cody leaves his. The commander has a private set of rooms in the same corridor as Obi-Wan, but before now they hadn't run into each other here. He watches Cody step into the corridor in his full kit, helmet tucked under his left arm. But he doesn't walk away when the door closes behind him, doesn't even look in Obi-Wan's direction. No, Cody turns, and with a solemn expression on his face, raises his right hand to gently lay his fingers against the pauldron hanging next to the door. He closes his eyes and mumbles something under his breath. Obi-Wan feels like an intruder, watching something that he shouldn't. He is about to turn around and walk away when Cody turns. Surprise flickers over the other man's face when he sees Obi-Wan, but when he simply nods in greeting, there is no indication he is upset at Obi-Wan's presence. It encourages Obi-Wan to ask, "May I ask what they are?" He's been curious about the pauldrons ever since Wooly initially showed him the Maverick's layout, and the question has sat unsated in his mind ever since. Cody raises an eyebrow. "You already have." Obi-Wan flinches. Yes, it seems that I have," he says, and offers Cody an apologetic smile. "Forgive my rudeness, and please forget I asked." He might be used to the Melodon's direct communication, but often forgets that many, mainly those from the Corps, find it rude and intrusive rather than efficient and effective. Cody hums in reply, and for a moment watches Obi-Wan, like he is considering answering the question or not. Releasing a breath, he turns his eyes to the pauldron he just touched, a glimmer of sorrow in his gaze. "We hang them to commemorate those that aren't with us any longer," he says softly, the coldness of grief surrounding him in the Force. He turns back to Obi-Wan, a sad smile on his lips. "I'm sure you understand that in war we can't afford to have proper burials, but we can do this." Obi-Wan can read between the lines, can understand that on a battlefield, it's easier to carry a brother's pauldron with you than his dead body. Even then, there should probably be so many more pauldrons lining the walls than there currently are. The bitter, harsh reality of war. "Before me, this room belonged to Alpha," Cody continues. "He's on Kamino now, but we give him the same respect as those that have fought valiantly and suffered for it." He nods his head at the pauldron. "We touch it for luck before a battle, a promise to come back and see your brothers again." Obi-Wan looks at the pauldron, white and blue rather than white and golden orange, with a frown. "That could also be in death," he murmurs. It sounds loud in the otherwise quiet hallway. "Such is war, but to have that promise, it brings us something," Cody says with a stiff shrug, and for a moment he looks very much like a man carrying the whole war on his shoulders. It is a feeling Obi-Wan can relate with, memories at the far edges of his mind he's tried to tuck away. It makes him want to reach out, place a comforting hand on the other's shoulder to ease some of that weight. Yet it isn't something he can do, considering that in reality he hardly knows Cody. So he offers the other comfort he can. During the war on Melodon, before a battle, we would hold out our palms toward each other, as close as we could without actually touching. His fingers itch talking about it. Even if, to this day, Cerasi, Neild, and Hem still greet each other like this, the current situation is different. He wonders if Cody felt the same vulnerability when speaking of the pauldrons. Sharing something that is perhaps so normal to you, but when put into words turns into something heartbreaking. It helped in the hopeless moments of battle. You could hold out your palm, close your eyes, and if you focused just hard enough, you could imagine that they were with you. A reminder not to die for those still living. When he catches Cody's eyes, he finds nothing but understanding in them, and perhaps a touch of gratitude. "We all find our ways," Cody murmurs. His wrist comm beeps, shrill and insistent. It startles the both of them out of the almost intimate bubble they'd found themselves in.
"Commander."
Jin's voice crackles over the comm. Cody sighs. "Duty calls," he tells Obi-Wan. He starts walking, replying to Jin that he is on my way to the bridge, sir. Obi-Wan watches him go, their conversation still in his mind, and something feels wrong about letting the other man walk away just like that. "Cody," he calls, when the other is almost at the end of the corridor. Cody turns, right at the end of the corridor. Obi-Wan doesn't quite have a name for what compels him to do it, but the Force hums in agreement when he raises his hand with the palm facing Cody. "Good luck out there." Surprise flickers over Cody's face. Slowly, he raises his own hand in return, and Obi-Wan knows it's only a play of his mind that he thinks he can feel the heat of the other's palm against his. "Thank you," Cody says with a small, warm smile, and for a moment, Obi-Wan can understand why in another reality, he would love this man. On the empty ship, occupied by only a skeleton crew, Obi-Wan has found his way to the empty mess hall. Around him, the air is tense and stifling. Not just here, but everywhere on the Maverick, the air is tight like a pulled bowstring. It's as if everyone is collectively holding their breath, pressure building and nerves growing as they wait. Wait for first news, wait for the first casualties. Because victory or not, in war there are always casualties. He sits with his tray empty in front of him, his pad discarded on the table, and stares at a wall. In an attempt to keep his mind occupied, he counts the bolts that hold the big Durasteel slabs together, lest his mind decide it wants to think of something else. He isn't haunted by the war, not like he used to be when he was younger. It will forever be there, an integral part of him that shaped him into who he is today. But with professional help and support, he's learned how to deal with it and to give it a place. There are still nightmares, but they are few and far between. But here, now, surrounded by nothing but anxious anticipation and silence, the war is very close. It's not his war the men fight, but it's his war that crawls up through the cracks of his memories now. It's the silence and the waiting, for it is always the silence and the waiting that feed the anxiety and worry. But it isn't just the sound of explosions that fill Obi-Wan's ears and the smell of sewage that fills his nose. No, there is worry curling in his gut too, for the men down below, for Wooly and the rest of Ghost, Thumper, and Cody. What if touching the pauldron and holding out their palms hasn't brought enough luck, his mind wonders. What if they die? What if he dies? He takes a deep breath. 267, 8, 9, 270, 1, 2, you okay? Obi-Wan's mind stutters over the next number. He blinks to himself, dragged from his thoughts, and looks up. Liga is standing at his table with a concerned frown. Obi-Wan clears his throat. I'm fine. Uh-huh. Liga doesn't sound like he believes Obi-Wan a single bit. Come, he says, with a beckoning motion. He waves a hand toward the kitchen hatch where three trays are waiting, each with big stacks of sandwiches on it. I'm gonna need some help carrying all of this. Obi-Wan stands up without protest, happy for the distraction and company. Where to? He asks, as he deposits his own tray on the conveyor belt, and then takes the new tray with the sandwiches Liga hands him. Medbay, Liga says, as both of them walk out of the mess. We've got all medical staff remaining on board on standby. And they made you pick this up all by yourself. Lyga chuckles. Would have asked one of the guys in the kitchen, but you looked like you could use something to do. Obi-Wan supposes it's one way to say he looked like he was panicking. Nonetheless, he's grateful Lyga was kind enough to drag him out of his melancholic corner. Thank you. I don't do well with sitting around while I could be out helping, he admits. Lyga chuckles. Well, carrying sandwiches ain't much, but trust me, it's an appreciated job. Those words are proven right the moment the two of them walk into the small break room attached to the med bay and are greeted by someone cheering, "Food!" Before Obi-Wan knows it, he's sitting around a table with the medics, munching on a sandwich and watching the others banter. For a few moments, the war seems very far away. Then the first medevac gets called in, ETA 15 minutes, and reality returns.
And if you're still breathing, you're the lucky ones. 'Cause most of us are heaving through corrupted lungs, setting fire to our insides for fun, collecting names of the lovers that went wrong.